Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lieutenant Commander Space Mage by Timothy Ellis. Narrated by Kevin T. Collins. 1.
What the hell? I stopped abruptly after stepping through the rift to Longwater from our living room on Haven Station. Serena stepped straight into me, and we both crashed towards the deck, which was fortunately carpeted. Jill stepped through and fell over Serena, going down over the top of both of us. Woof ended up lying on top of her. "Wait!" I yelled. Matunga stuck his head through the rift and started laughing. He vanished, and the sound of a lot of laughter came through the rift instead. Woof scrambled off the top of Jill. She rolled off Serena, who picked herself up, leaving me spread full length. I looked up at the three of them, but they were ignoring me completely. I wasn't surprised. We were not on Longwater. That much was obvious. Someone had moved my rift. Picking myself up was easy enough, but the girls helping me would have been nice. Instead, they were staring, mouths open, at the much bigger-than-expected room we were in. It was definitely a living room, but set up for a lot more people than we had. Longwater's upper living room sat 30 comfortably. This one looked like it sat 60. "Where the hell are we?" asked Jill. I moved away from the rift, noticing all the other rifts were in place, as I expected, albeit the wall was a lot longer than needed for the rifts. The girls followed me, but Woof moved to the side of the rift we'd come in through and stuck his head back through it.
"It's okay now," he said, pulled his head back, and stepped aside.
Matunga stepped through, looked around with an amazed look on his face, but kept moving. The rest followed. By the time all of them were through, I'd moved to the door to the main passageway, and they followed me out. A quick glance in each direction showed me this was a much bigger ship than the corvette I'd expected to return to. I turned for the bridge, and everyone followed me. The bridge was substantially bigger than I was used to, and had three main chairs down the middle instead of two. The layout was bog-standard Imperium, but the third chair was raised on a rostrum and was obviously meant for an admiral. Leanne and Tamsin were waiting, seated on opposite ends of the main console, but swiveled to watch us walking in. Both were grinning. We all still looked like we were sleepwalking in someone's dream and hadn't yet figured out whose. A figure popped up on the console to one side of the helm chair, not a head and shoulders as we normally saw, but a full, half-height figure. This one belonged to Admiral Jedburgh.
"Welcome to your new ship, Commander. All of you please be seated. I won't keep you long."
I sat in the captain's chair, while Jill took the XO's chair to my left, and Serena the third officer's chair to my right. The others divided themselves to the left and right chairs. Given our ships had so far been designed for only three people and the ship AI, I had no idea why they still had so many chairs on the bridges. Technically, as far as I knew, I still reported to Rear Admiral Jane. Even being promoted yesterday to Lieutenant Commander, there had been no word of anything changing, and the morning after a particularly good party was an unexpected time for things to change radically on you. Jedburgh wasn't Jane's superior, as she worked for the Imperator, but he was the admiral who commanded the Imperium's Space Navy. And so, my ultimate boss, no matter who was giving me orders.
"You're all getting new ships," he went on. "Commander, you get the biggest one, in the form of a new class of cruiser, which is essentially a scaled-down, relentless-class dreadnought. It's half the length, but not half the firepower by any means. I'll leave you to find out what it does hit with." He looked directly at me. The class hasn't been named, and so far it's one of a kind. It was built specifically for you, completed and acceptance-tested several days ago, but we hadn't at the time the ship was designed expected you to be promoted quite so soon. So, instead of someone else getting her for a shakedown cruise, you do. Thank you, sir. May I ask her name? You may change the name if you wish, but for now she's called Judge Thorne. I smiled at him, as did everyone else. Thorne had been my great-great-uncle and the most powerful mage ever. Naming a ship after him made sense, and me being her first captain was an honor. Sounds perfect to me, sir. He looked around the rest of my team. You remain Navy Mage Squadron 1, but your corvettes are being reassigned in preparation for Navy Mage 2, when they are ready to step up. You'll find the rifts in the squadron living room lead to 12 destroyers, which are also a new class, based on the water-class Super Corvette, but using a more scaled-down version of this ship. The original idea was to use whatever destroyer hulls were available, but the first of them proved too difficult to modify the way your corvettes were. So we built 12 brand new destroyers instead. The rest were looking enthusiastic, and quite obviously wanted to sprint back to the living room rifts and claim a ship. Are we still operating as carriers? I asked. Yes. Eagle Wing will be coming aboard as soon as you're ready for them. You'll get some time to get used to your new commands, and then receive orders to pick up more squadrons. For now, you'll get a mix of Excalibur 4s and 5s. Most of the new squadrons will be 5s, though. You'll shake down for a day or two, and then we have a mission for you. Are we getting an admiral, sir? I was wondering if we'd be seeing Jane again. Not immediately. And from now on, you report directly to me, as one of the independent commands. But Admiral Jane still has an interest in you, and of course, anything which needs an immediate response will have orders coming from her as usual. All ships cruiser-sized and above are being fitted out for flagship duty now, so having the extra chair and rooms does not indicate they will be used. Likewise, we took what you did with Longwater to ensure the squadron had its own living rooms on the flagship, so you can remain a team while your squadrons have their own living areas. Any questions? No, sir. I'll await our formal orders. Good. Carry on, Commander. Aye, sir. The hollow vanished. Yes, said Wolf, doing a fist pump. 2. Their co-pilot AIs were waiting beside a rift. We watched them all step through onto their own ship, and then Serena and I went back to our bridge. One by one, they popped up on the much wider console between Leanne and Serena. No one said anything, as we all dived into the ship's systems to verify everything was as it should be. Even midshipmen were taught never to accept a ship without checking it first yourself. An hour later, I was satisfied Judge Thorne was indeed ready for action. I'd even verified our cargoes from our corvettes had followed us, mainly being Ralnor goodies we'd not really had a chance to sample properly yet. I suspected Syrinx had done the transfers of the rifts and cargoes, as very few mages could move one end of a rift like this. It saved me the trouble of having to do them all again myself, or even Git or Haynes having to. The judge, as I was already thinking of this ship as, was essentially a pocket battleship. The length was a half kilometer, making her a cruiser hull, but everything had been retained at battleship levels. 3 main turrets to each side of the basic oblong hull shape, 2 located forward and 1 aft on 2 sides, and 1 forward and 2 aft on the other 2. All of them could fire in any direction at the same time, which somewhat negated the layout, I thought. While being cruiser-sized turrets, what came out of each barrel was a battleship pulse. The ship was covered in destroyer turrets, also overpowered, firing cruiser pulses. It also had standard 100 firing Mosquito launchers dotted all over the ship, and plenty of bigger missile launchers for the latest types. And wherever there was a spare bit of space on the hull, there were point defense turrets and anti-fighter turrets. With a bridge right in the middle of the front of the ship, there was no ship view ahead, just gun barrels visible if you looked in any direction. Apart from the battleship turrets and the forward-facing, overpowered cruiser guns, the main broadside was 200 torpedo launchers in groups on the nose in each quarter of the ship front. There were internal fighter bays for 4 12-ship squadrons, which was the same as a Scimitar-class carrier, but only because we didn't need maintenance bays or launch tubes or fabricators for parts. The bays could do basic repair and rearming, but if we needed replacement fighters, they'd be jumped to us. In addition, there were 4 Lightning Couriers aboard, and both Captain and Admiral's gigs. There was a cargo bay under the bridge level, running the length of the ship, which I thought we'd been phasing out of new ships, but some of it was allocated for the storage of wrecked fighters to go back to the shipyard for repair, and the rest had enough ordnance to completely resupply the destroyers twice. Needless to say, there was enough pilot accommodation for 50 people, plus the usual living and training facilities for them. There were already rifts in place from each bedroom to a fighter bay, allowing a just-woken-up pilot to take seconds to reach their ship. Their main living room also had 48 rifts, which did the same thing, not leaving much in the way of actual wall space left. There was also a rift back to Haven Station. On the bridge level, there was, of course, Captain, XO, and Third Officer quarters, plus Admiral's quarters, which were bigger than mine, and the major living area we'd come in through. The wet room had 2 30-person spas, and the mess and conference rooms sat the same as the living room. It made me wonder if the ship had been designed to support double the number of destroyers. Admiral, XO, and Third Officer had their own offices, and mine was the usual ready room off the bridge. We had our own small armory as well, with combat suits already standing in recharge bays for both of us and our AIs. I turned my attention to the Boulder-class destroyers. They were essentially a scaled-down version of my ship, and while destroyer-sized at 250 meters long, they were pocket cruisers. Almost identical to Judge, but smaller, the front end was only different in having 100 torpedo launchers. The Boulder class were long and thin, the same as Judge, where the Water class corvette was short and squat, so the front end of the destroyer wasn't much bigger than the corvette had been. Each destroyer was carrier to 2 squadrons of fighters. There was enough cargo space for a single full reload of both fighters and the ship, after which they needed resupply from Judge. But the way we fought at the moment, no fighter was going to use a full load of torpedoes in one action. The Navy captain had the usual captain facilities, but was expected to come to Judge for any gathering of Navy people. The pilots did have everything they needed, and the captain could, of course, join them. All 13 ships were lean, mean fighting machines, designed for moving a large fighter force as far as needed and supporting them. All we needed now was the extra squadrons. One by one, the others checked in as being ready to proceed, and I had to chuckle as I found out the ship names, which largely mirrored the Water class. Jill had Long Boulder, Dorm had Small, Davis had Big, Fina with Hot,
Haynes with cold, Edna with still, Matunga with rolling, Woof with carved, Norden with falling, Git with sliding, Mel with ice, and Lauren with space boulder. The Imperium military leaders were really fast-tracking us. Lieutenants were now captaining destroyers, where once this was the realm of full commanders. Captains used to command cruisers, and now here I was in command of a pocket battleship while a newly minted lieutenant commander. Mind you, experienced full commanders were now piloting dreadnoughts, so I was one step closer to our goal to get one of these ourselves. Leanne laughed when Jill announced Long Boulder was ready for anything, given it was the third ship we knew of, with Long being the first part of the name. Her change of name had been vindicated faster than expected, and since Jill's AI had a unique name which was not the ship's, there was only one Long-named AI out there we knew about. Long Ocean. "Announce us ready for fighters," I told Tamsin. 3. 16 squadrons jumped in to meet us. 4 of them jumped aboard Judge, and I recognized them as the original Eagle Wing, plus one. 1 squadron joined each destroyer. This meant 3 more squadrons had gone operational in the last few days. I assumed we had another 12 to go. All 4 on Judge were equipped with the Excalibur Mark V. 8 of the destroyer squadrons were still flying the Mark IV, including the newly activated squadrons. The dynamics of 4 different types of ships in the task force was going to require some thinking and a lot of practice. I braced myself for a long, boring day. Squadron leader Lacey, still with the call sign Eagle, which was still also the wing name, in spite of him being demoted yesterday from Space Commodore, bounded onto the bridge, looking a much happier man than he'd been in recent weeks. He took the empty XO's seat, as he always did, and grinned at me. He now wore the same insignia I did, and so did another 15 officers, all like him, leading squadrons. He still had Imperium time in service on his side, which is why he was still acting wing commander. Technically, we were equals. In practice, I commanded the Navy squadron, which was always senior. But he had donkey's years of experience through multiple wars, and I didn't. Finding a balance was going to be interesting. He opened his mouth to say something, but didn't get the chance. "Orders, Commander," said Admiral Jane, as her half-height image popped up on the console next to Serena. "You're to go through the rift the Imperator left in place to the other side of the core and jump to a system I've sent Tamsin. There you will find a small convoy of traitors and some Trixone fighters." "You want us to destroy the fighters?" I asked. "No, protect them. They are the sole survivors of the battle there a day ago, and the Imperator and others who watched it cheered them on as they escaped. They successfully avoided several Rottenuga fleets, and they don't know they're about to run into another one. Go and save all of them." "Do we really care about Trixone fighters?" asked Eagle. "Just these ones. What if they fire on us? Ignore them, if possible. Jump in, kill the dinosaurs, and jump back to the end of the rift again." "You do know we've never so much as done a simulator run flying these ships," I said, "let alone with 16 squadrons of fighters as well?" "We have faith in you. Get moving." Her image vanished. I looked at Tamsin and nodded. "All pilots to your ships. Prepare for combat launch. This is not a drill." There was a solid thump behind me, followed by a lesser thump, and we looked around to see Eagle lying flat on his back on the deck. "Fuck!" he exclaimed, rolling onto his side, rubbing his nose. Beyond him, on the wall, there was no outline of a rift down to the hangar deck, like we'd had on Longwater. As he sluggishly made it back to his feet, I looked up where his fighter was located and put a rift in place to take him directly there. I made it more than normal outlined as a door. He looked at it suspiciously, put his hand through, and then stepped into it. Needless to say, he was last popping up on the console, with even his eagle-faced co-pilot beating him. "Ready," said Jill from the other side of the console, rapidly followed by the rest of my squadron. "Go," I said, and all 13 ships first jumped into a line, a stern formation in front of the rift. We powered through, and once Jill on the end was through, we began jumping again. In under a minute, we appeared near to a jump point, but well above it, where below us a fleet of raw Tanuga battleships had staked it out, still in their normal wall formation. "How the hell did they get there?" asked Git. "They must have discovered a shortcut," suggested Mel.
"Very likely," said Tamsin.
"Orders?" asked Wolf, cutting off that discussion.
I'd been looking down on the formation, and at the other side, where there was indeed a half dozen ships and 200 fighters approaching the jump point. We didn't have long to do something. The fastest thing to do was close the jump point, so it was done as soon as I thought of it. At the least, it would stop either side running into the others. I added extra intent to the other side, so ships would come back out in a way they wouldn't collide with any still going in. All the same, though. "Tamsin, send the traitors on the other side of the jump point a message to not approach the jump point until told it's clear to use. Inform them a raw Tanuga fleet is staking out the other side, and even when dealt with, the jump point will be too dangerous to use until any mess is cleaned up. Sent." Below us were 16 battleships, all identical looking, and three times as big as Judge in terms of length and width. The obvious way of dealing with them was a rift dragged across their nice, neat wall formation, but that wasn't going to keep the pilots happy. We had 13 capital ships and 16 squadrons for 16 targets. It made the math easy. "I want wall formations by squadrons, the shape of each wall so all fighters will fire direct into the front end of a battleship without needing to strafe. Shift formation now." I didn't bother looking to see what they did. "Tamsin, I want jump to locations for each squadron and their destroyer. The squadron hits the front end, the destroyer hits the rear end. Judge gets three rapid jumps timed to torpedo fire rates, and three of the squadrons with fours attack synced to us."
"Confirmed."
"Formations completed," said Eagle. "This is a one-hit jump, people. We jump in, hit them with everything, and jump out within a second. No one takes the time for a second shot."
"What if a second shot is needed?" asked one of the new squadron leaders.
"Then we take the time to reassess back here, and then someone does it as a deliberate strike. There is to be no improvisation in this attack. Clear?"
"Clear, sir."
There wouldn't need to be a second attack. I was pretty sure of that.
"Ready," said Serena. "Jump in 10, except for the two squadrons sinking with Judge," said Tamsin.
We jumped, Judge suddenly behind the engines of a battleship. Serena fired everything, and we jumped again, fired again, this time just torpedoes, and again jumped and fired torpedoes. The last jump put us back where we started from, and Serena accidentally fired a fourth salvo of torpedoes before she could get her finger off the button. The ships below us were in varying states of devastation. The first one Judge had hit was gone, with the other two missing most of their rear ends and chunks of their noses. The ones the fives had hit were nothing but debris, while the ones the fours had hit still had damaged front ends and intact middle sections. Only one ship looked like it still had power.
I put a rift in front of the departing torpedoes, with the other end against the middle of the only ship with still-moving gun turrets. They stopped moving when most of the middle of the ship vanished.
"Damn," said a pilot.
"No second run."
"Not today," said Eagle. "All squadrons, home jump." In a blink, they all vanished from the nav map and HUD.
"Salvage droids?" asked Lauren.
"No need," said Git. "Bud will send what's left to join the other fleets we disabled the other day."
And so I did. The interesting thing was, where I sent them now had what looked like raw Tanuga support ships trying to salvage what they could. There was a line of damaged ships being pulled by tugs in the direction of the nearest jump point. But I noticed they were only towing ships they must have thought they could repair. The rest, some with a third of their length missing or the middle missing, were being ignored. With no debris left in this system, I reopened the jump point and nodded to Tamsin to send the traders the news. Nothing had come back from the previous message, and none came back now either. The ships also hadn't stopped, either, and were almost to the jump point. "Put us in front of the jump point in a line abreast formation, Judge in the middle, but back out at Titan range, so even if their fighters shoot at us, we get plenty of warning." Serena nodded to the mirror she had in front of her, so she could see me without turning, and then Tamsin turned and nodded to me as well. We jumped again, now facing directly at the jump point. The wait for the small convoy was something of an anti-climax. When they finally popped in, the fighters did indeed fire at us from outside effective range. Leanne had a channel open before I could ask, since I was putting up a shield at the same time. "My Imperator's compliments to the Trixone fighters. You fought a great battle, you survived, and managed to avoid the raw Tanuga fleets on your way here. Alas, they beat you here and waited in ambush. We've removed them for you. Have a good journey to your destination." Their cruiser fire weakly hit my shield at that point, way beyond its effective hitting range. I let it flare as if being badly hit, and then dropped it, leaving us sitting there undamaged. "Jump us out of their path," I ordered, and a blink later, we're well above them. They hadn't slowed down, which, had we been ordered to take them, would have been suicidal. They hadn't fired a second time. Finally, a bridge showed up on the main screen.
"The warriors with us will not respond," said a white rat in the center chair, "but on their behalf, we thank you for the consideration. We were not aware of any force being in front of us, but we have confirmed a fleet's worth of debris has appeared suddenly in another system behind us. That may sound contradictory, but there are holes in local communications now. In any case, we thank you for your help."
"You're welcome." The channel closed. "Jump us back to the rift we came through," I ordered.
4. I left the bridge to Serena. My ready room was bigger than my previous one on Longwater, with both a conference table for 6 and the same number of lounge chairs. The desk was bigger, and behind it was a larger display case where my medals and actual insignia were laid out for striking effect. I sat with my back to the case, and the ship status displays lit up on the wall opposite me. For the first time, I pulled up a record screen and set it running. "Admiral, the Trixone fighters are safe, as are the traders. The fighters fired on us, but the traders seems to be appreciative of removing a threat they didn't know about. It seems their communications network in this area is partly compromised, probably due to enemy action. I can report that attacks of less than 1 second duration were effective, with no return fire reported. We were just too fast, with a capital ship hitting the stern and a squadron hitting the nose.
I'm not sure how long we'll get away with this, but for now, I suspect it's probably safe for other ships to use in the short term. You might like to suggest to the fleet admirals that attacks lasting less than a second might work against the trick zone as well, and if they can keep them below half a second, only automated systems can possibly respond. In theory. Shakedown.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?